Los Angeles Dodgers and New York Yankees both win their divisions last night. Is this your World Series matchup? Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, September 27th. This is the final weekend before the postseason. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. Follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, almost a full slate of games last night. Obviously, not everybody was playing. Mariners were off. Braves and Mets obviously got, you know, moved to Monday. But we did see some very significant results last night. We're going to start off Yankees-Orioles. Yankees came into this series needing one win or a Baltimore loss, which they're playing them, to win the AL East. They finally got it in the third game. Dominant 10-1 victory. Garrett Cole, 6 2/3, 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. Giancarlo Stanton, homers. Alex Verdugo, somehow homers. Aaron Judge hits his 58th home run. Are the New York Yankees now in the driver's seat for the World Series? Should they be the AL World Series favorite as of right now?
I think they should be the favorite, yeah. I'm still hesitant to calling them in the driver's seat just because I'm pretty high on some of the other American League teams. I think the Astros are still, you know, inevitable. They keep talking about them. Mm-hmm. And I am really surprised at what those Tigers are doing right now. And I know that that's comes to a shock the most. And I've saw some things on socials thinking that not a single AL Central team is going to win a playoff series that heads into playoffs. I think that's going to be wrong, but we'll see. But I do think that the Yankees should be the favorite. And I think they've earned that, especially as of late. Garrett Cole looks like he is absolutely playoff ready. He looked fantastic in that matchup against the Orioles. And the Orioles offense for, you know, the first time in what seemed like the last 5 games kind of stalled. And that was with Garrett Cole on the mound. So you got to like what you see for Yankees fans seeing Garrett Cole shove. But on the flip side, Corbin Burns did exactly the same thing too. He probably had the most undeserving loss of the season with the only, even though the score was what, 10-1, Burns only gave up 1 solo homer on the Stanton. He had 9 strikeouts in his 5 innings. So
2 hits, I hope 1 walk to 9 strikeouts. That's a great ratio.
Each starter only allowed 2 hits, which was really impressive. And gotta give Cole a little nod there. He went farther in the game, but I will say this. If we get this matchup again in Orioles and Yankees, maybe we see it in the ALDS or ALCS, however seedings wind up and work out, I hope we get Cole and Burns at least in one of those games. I hope they find a way to match that up perfectly because that was really nice baseball last night, and I want to see that in the postseason.
Yeah, that was, I think, the best pitching matchup of the night. And this was something we're going to get to the Dodgers and Shohei Ohtani in a second, but Aaron Judge hitting that 58th home run. We've talked before about him being so close to 60 home runs. He's also close to 400 total bases. He's 8 bases away. So 2 homers will do it. And that would be because, again, we're going to get to Ohtani. He hit 400 total bases last night. But do we think Aaron Judge hit 60 home runs given that they only have 2 games left? And you're probably getting a hangover lineup today against the Pirates because they clinched last night. And Judge jokingly said as much in the post game last night. He's planning on partying today. He's probably going to need a break. So assuming he's off today, you get 2 more games of Aaron Judge. We think he hits 60.
Yesterday, I said, I think he gets to 59, but watching him hit that home run yesterday and him continue that streak, he just makes it look so easy. Mm-hmm. So I might have to change my answer and say, yeah, I think even if he does sit out today, if he keeps continuing his average of 1 home run per game over the last 8 games or so, I think it's actually 6 games, then yeah, I think he makes it. And then he can kill 2 birds with 1 stone, as he mentioned. He can get that 400 total bases. He can get the 60 home runs. And I think that's a hell of a season, Lindsey, by what we're seeing from Aaron Judge. Now, if he gets 60 and he also gets 40 home runs,
60 home runs.
Oh, excuse me. If he gets 60 home runs, who do you say has the better season? Is it Judge or is it Ohtani? I mean, I know my answer, but how about you?
As much as I love Judge hitting 60 homers, I don't think it's a question at Shohei Ohtani, just because it's so many things we've never seen before. I mean, it's there was an article, I think, in The Athletic recently. They talked about how guys hitting milestones like that has clouded the MVP race, right? And I don't think it has. I think that's just a pushback to Ohtani being a DH, because it's milestones, but it's milestones people have never hit before or have rarely hit. We haven't seen 60 homer seasons in MLB, short of Aaron Judge, it feels like, since the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. We've never seen 55-55. And so it's an amazing season. It's probably the best season, offensive season in baseball, if Shohei Ohtani doesn't exist. But Ohtani's absolutely the leader on this. And if Judge sits out today, he'll miss Jared Jones. He'll take on Paul Skeens on Saturday from Yankee Stadium, and then Bailey Falter on Sunday. You got to feel like maybe the Pirates bullpen, he could get one off of the Pirates bullpen. And then you feel like maybe he can get one off the lefty Falter to get to 60. We'll see what happens. It's going to be really interesting to watch, though. The Yankees are one game up on the Guardians for best record in the American League, so they would have home field all the way through, but both them and the Guardians have secured a bye. The Guardians go to Houston this weekend for 3, so we'll see what happens there. Both teams solidly locked into the postseason. Both teams locked into their seeding, the 2 and the 3. That's not going to change. Even with the Astros sweep, that wouldn't change. So we'll see how competitive that series is and how much of that is them setting up their rotations. I really feel like that's probably what you're going to end up getting there. The late game last night, Dodgers versus Padres, 7-2 Dodgers victory. Again, clinches the division for them. They had been sitting on one game needed or a Padres loss. When they entered this 3-game series against the Padres, Padres fought, took 2 of them, but they got the 3rd. Some of the interesting stories from here, Walker Buehler and Joe Musgrove both look good for their respective teams. Musgrove, 6 1/3, 2 runs on 5 hits. 1 walk to 6 strikeouts. Walker Buehler, 1 run on 5 hits in 5 innings, only struck out 1. I want to get into that, but first, we got to talk about the injury. Freddie Freeman leaves the game. He's trying to beat out an infield single in the 7th inning with an ankle injury. He rolled his ankle trying to stop after he ran through the bag. He was on crutches after the game with a walking boot. The x-rays he got after the game were negative. So the team and Freddie believes he'll be able to go by next Saturday, which is when they would play their first matchup. So he's done for the rest of the regular season. Obviously, they have the bye after that. But Freeman rolled ankle. He said he's never done that before. How concerned are you about LA's offense if Freddie is not able to play on Saturday?
In the postseason? Oh, I mean, you got to be somewhat concerned. He's been fantastic for the team. And, you know, top of the lineup, that's that three-headed monster of him, Ohtani and Betts. I mean, that's a valid concern if he doesn't play or if he's not 100% even. I will say that it looked nasty. I found a still online of his rolled ankle. It like just sitting there. It was gross. I'm glad that the x-rays have come back to be negative and things look good. But hey, this is one of those things where you work your butt off as a team and you get to 95 wins and you become the first seed in the playoffs or second seed and you get a bye. It comes in handy. And things like this is why you want to work for those bye weeks or that series off, because Freddie Freeman is going to have some more time to rest now. I don't think we're going to see him at all for the rest of the regular season. We shouldn't. And then he gets that extra series off. And then, like you said, over a full week of recovery without getting placed on an injured list, without any designation, you just set him on the bench and you just let him prepare to recover. So I think that's huge. And, you know, when you look at Freddie Freeman, what he has done for this team, if he is not 100%, any team in the National League that comes into the NLDS against the Dodgers, you have to think who those teams could be. You know, one of those teams could be a team like the Mets or like the Braves. They could totally take advantage of that if Freddie Freeman's not ready. So I will say this with the Dodgers pitching staff, how they've been a little shaky right now. They need that Dodgers offense to be 100%. And right now, that's a concern heading into next Saturday.
Yeah, it's you have to think the chances of advancing to the World Series go down a little bit if Freddie is in fact not able to play or not able to play effectively next weekend. It is, I have a little bit of a lingering, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, a little bit on a later show. I have a little bit of question about what kind of response Dave Roberts gets if they have another early exit in the postseason. Obviously, like I said, we'll get to that a different time, but something I think will come up. More injury concerns for the Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw addressed the media yesterday. They are in what Dave Roberts called a holding pattern. He's been out since August 30th with a bone spur in his big toe, and he recently stopped throwing off of a mound because of pain from pushing off the rubber. He said, quote, "I'm not giving up. I'm going to keep trying every day. Maybe I'll feel better one day. I'm just waiting for that day to happen. Whenever my toe feels better, I'm confident that I'll be good," end quote. Roberts said he wouldn't be an option for at least a couple weeks. Do you think we see Clayton Kershaw in the postseason, or is this rotation Flaherty, Yamamoto, and then some combination of Walker Buehler and Landon Knack?
Yeah, if we do see him, it'll be probably towards the end of the NLCS or if they make the World Series. And I think that might be just more of a nod to what Kershaw has done for the organization over the last, you know, however many years he's been there. So regardless, I don't think that you're going to have a 100% Clayton Kershaw, as we just mentioned with Freddie Freeman. You won't have that because it seems like he's been dealing with this injury for a very long time. So the numbers that we've seen from Clayton Kershaw have been a non-100% Kershaw for quite some time. Walker Buehler looked pretty good yesterday, though, and that might be a helpful sign and a reason why Kershaw might not see the field again, because he looked okay. I mean, other than his rocky start the other day, he had two good starts in a row. So, I mean, I'll take that. And, you know, we talked about the potential of him not even making the postseason roster. Now with these injuries, he's probably locked in as your number three.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, one strikeout yesterday. I can imagine a short leash on Buehler, maybe stacking him with Landon Knack. I do think another option, Tony Gonsolin, who had Tommy John surgery last year, he's made three rehab starts. You have to wonder, does the team maybe see him as a possible two or three inning piggyback to Buehler, and they just kind of piece it together where it's Buehler. If you have to pull Buehler out in the middle of an inning, you go to a fireman to put out a fire, you let Gonsolin eat a couple, and then you go to the rest of the bullpen. There's options here. I don't think it's as dire as we thought it was, but Flaherty, Yamamoto, Buehler, Knack, I mean, piecing it together, not where you thought you would be when the season started and you're like, we're going to get Kershaw back. We've got Yamamoto. We've got, you know, Gavin Stone. We've got Tyler Glasnow, all of this stuff. Kind of not really where you thought you were. We do.
You know, I don't know if Gonsolin will work. I don't know if Gonsolin will work, though, Lindsay, because he's a cat guy and Shohei Ohtani's got decoy now. So I don't know if that's a good idea to bring Gonsolin back. I'm just saying.
Speaking of Shohei Ohtani, he did, like, so last night in this game, he goes 3-for-5 because of course he does. He now has 400 total bases on the season. It's only happened 30 times since 1900. The last time it happened was 2001, where four guys did it. Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, Todd Helton, and Luis Gonzalez. So Shohei Ohtani, 400 total bases. And we had that brief in the last segment there about which of these is a more impressive season. Shohei Ohtani is batting. He's now batting average is up over 300 again. 305. The 387 on base, which leads the NL, 643 slugging, leads the NL, 1.30 OPS, leads the NL, 131 runs scored, leads all of baseball, 716 plate appearances, leads the NL, 126 RBI, 53 homers. Is there anything that Shohei Ohtani can't do? Like, is there, if there's anything where you can think of right now that he just would not be able to do?
Yeah, he's a disgrace. He's only third in batting average in the National League. I can't believe it, right? No, that, I mean, there's nothing. I have no answer for that. No, Shohei Ohtani's is absolutely incredible. I will say this, though. Speaking of those four players from 2001, if Aaron Judge makes that 400 total bases and we get Yankees Dodgers in the World Series like we previewed at the beginning of this show or teased at the beginning of this show, it'll be the first time since who knows when that two 400 base guys will go off against each other in the World Series, because only Luis Gonzalez made the World Series in 2001 with the Arizona Diamondbacks out of those four.
Speaking of, can we just real quick, let me read you the stats for what Luis Gonzalez did in 2001. He batted 325 with a 1.117 OPS, 57 homers. He stole one base. That wasn't a big part of his game, but walked 100 times, only struck out 83, scored 128 runs, and drove in 142. Like, I think we kind of forget in that late 90s, early 2000s, the Maguire, Sosa, Bonds, home run stuff. We forget how dominant Luis Gonzalez was there with Arizona for a little while, especially in 2001. And that's just absurd what he was able to do there.
Yeah, that rotation back then, I think, takes the cake. And there's a big reason why people don't pay attention to guys like Luis Gonzalez. But that entire team was really good. And there's a reason why they made the World Series. Yeah, but then you look at, they had Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling as their 1-2 punch in 2001. Gosh. That was a very fun team to watch. I remember that.
Curt Schilling was the number one, 22-6 with a 2.98 ERA. Johnson was the 21-6 with a 2.49. No other starter on that team who started, I think, more than like, no other starter, period, had an ERA under 4. But those two dudes were just so freaking dominant. 256 and 2/3 for Curt Schilling, 249 and 2/3 for Randy Johnson. They combined for 9 complete games and 3 shutouts. Just absurd. Oh, and Randy Johnson also closed out a game in the regular season during that stretch. Like, just... it was a different time. It was a different time. They both took the ball 35 times. Just, it was a different time, but that was a great team. And thank you for the reminder of how good that 01 Diamondbacks squad was.
Yeah, that rotation was amazing. And I mean, if you looked at that batting lineup, only 3 players had over 100 OPS plus: Mark Grace, Gonzalez, and Reggie Sanders. They even had a guy on their starting lineup, Tony Womack, who had a 64 OPS plus as their shortstop and still found a way to make the World Series.
Gross. Okay, so the wild card races tightened up a little bit yesterday. Obviously, Braves and Mets didn't play, but that is now down. Braves, Mets, Diamondbacks are the only three teams contending for those last two spots, right? Cubs are 7 games back. Cardinals are 7 games back. So neither team is in this. They're officially eliminated. It's just 3 teams for 2 spots. The American League is even tighter. The Twins and Mariners are both 3 games back. It's the Tigers and Royals locked into 2 and 3. Not locked into 2 and 3. I think their magic number for both of them might actually be 1. One more win and they're set up. Right now, the odds of not making the playoffs for the Twins are at 97%. And they really have themselves to blame. Last night, they lose in 13 innings to the Miami Marlins. And they had plenty of opportunities to score and didn't do it. The Twins finished this game 2-for-19 with runners in scoring position and left 15 on base. So here is my question. Tigers host the White Sox. We'll get to them in a minute. Royals at Braves. And then in the NL, Diamondbacks at Padres, who were locked into the number 4. Mets at Milwaukee, who is locked into the number 3. Do we end up having to even play these games on Monday? Because we're at a situation now, the AL's not going to change. As long as Kansas City doesn't get swept this weekend and the Twins don't sweep Baltimore,
right,
then the AL situation's not going to change. None of us think the Tigers are going to lose more than one game at worst to the White Sox, the hottest team in baseball right now, the Tigers, 9-1 in the last 10 games. Do we even play these games on Monday?
if you're a Mets or you're a Braves fan, you are the biggest Padres fan this weekend. I think that there is a strong chance that they play at least one, but I don't know if you see the doubleheader. And it all depends on what happens with those Diamondbacks, as we mentioned. And then we'll see what happens, obviously, with that Brewers-Mets series. But going to the American League, that can end as fast as today.
Yeah.
Because the Twins have to win out and then hope that the other two teams lose out. They have the tiebreaker, but they're three games behind right now, three games to go. If the Twins lose one game, it's over. Both Kansas City and Detroit clinched. So, like, when you're talking about the Braves and the Royals series, the Royals don't have to win a single game the rest of the way. The Tigers don't have to win another game the rest of the way. Now, obviously, it'll help for their magic number to get it done faster and clinch it themselves. And I think that's what you're going to see from the Tigers. I think they're going to pull all the stunts Friday night over here against the White Sox. I think you're going to see that. I think that
you have to pull out stops against the White Sox.
Well, I mean, apparently, as of lately, unless the Angels are just one of those teams we need to be on watch for next year about them maybe breaking that record. But the Tigers, I think you're at home, you're at Comerica, you have the opportunity to clinch a postseason for the first time in a very long time with this young core, a team that was not expecting to be where you're at. You were sellers. And then you not only do you have the chance to clinch the postseason, you have another magical route to clinch the worst record in the history of baseball against a division rival at home. I think it's a perfect, it's like you write Disney movies from this, Lindsay. So I think the Detroit Tigers are going to win tonight. They're going to clinch, they're going to punch their ticket. With that being said, it's probably going to just keep the Royals and the Twins in the race. But if the Twins lose, we know that that's gone. So I'm going to go out on the limb and say that the AL is done after tonight. So then all eyes will be on the Arizona Diamondbacks and see what happens there. If you're a Braves or a Mets fan, you want them to get swept by those San Diego Padres.
Yeah. White Sox Tigers, 640. Garrett Crochet goes for the White Sox. Orioles Twins is at 810. Pablo Lopez versus Cade Povich. Again, next time Twins lose, they are out of the postseason, and that locks things up. Best case scenario for the Braves, because I am a Braves guy, best case scenario for the Braves is it's locked up after tonight, because that means that you see Kansas City probably relax. They have Brady Singer going tonight against the Braves, Seth Lugo on Saturday, and Cole Reagans on Sunday. And you got to think, if they lock it up on Friday, even if they don't, like, even if it's just because of a loss from the Twins, you have to think that once they lock it up, they're not throwing Lugo and Reagans. They're holding them for the wild card. So that's the best case scenario for Atlanta. Because Atlanta obviously needs to keep winning. We'll break down that more on the Braves Today podcast coming out around noon Eastern today. Okay, let's get into quick pitch real quick. A couple interesting games. We're in a different order here on the rundown, but let's go ahead and jump to the White Sox. We talked about them. They not only beat the Los Angeles Angels, they beat them handily. Like, it wasn't even that close. 7-0. They put up 12 hits. They held the Angels to 6 hits and completed a sweep at home to get the win. Only the third win for Chris Flexen of the year. I think it's his first since, I think I saw maybe May, which is wild. But this is something, they hadn't scored 7 runs in an inning this season. They scored 7 runs in the 5th inning. They get their second 3-game sweep of the season. They are now going on the road, but all they had to do to set the record was lose one more game. And the fans who have been coming, they've averaged like 14,000 fans a game all year. Like, it's not like Oakland, where they've gotten 5,000 people in the ballpark. People have been showing up to these games. It's not huge, but people have been showing up. And these fans don't even get to see them set the record for wins or for losses in a season. That's kind of frustrating. I'm sorry. They averaged just under 18,000 fans a game, according to MLB.com. How frustrating is it as a season ticket holder for the White Sox to go to 81 games, watch almost all of them be losses, and then not see them set the record at home, assuming they're going to set it on the road because the Tigers, again, hottest team in baseball down the stretch?
I think you could have just ended that sentence with, how frustrating is it to be a White Sox fan? And you just could have ended right there. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to set some sort of record, whether it's a bad record or not, I think you'd want to be in attendance for it. I mean, if you're a baseball fan, if you want to be able to say, hey, I was there when I saw this, you know, no matter the case, that's a cool thing to put on your resume as a fan. So, no, I think that's definitely frustrating. On the flip side, they beat the Angels, and the Angels go with a franchise record of losses in this one. And they move down to, what is it now? They have 96 losses on the season. So they go to a franchise record. And what the Angels, everything went wrong for them. They obviously say goodbye to Shohei Ohtani. Mike Trout gets injured. We talked about how Shohei Ohtani left the Dodgers to get 50-50. Well, the Angels did have a 50-50 guy as well. It was Anthony Rendon. He finally hit his 50th IL stint, and he's been suspended for 50 games, right? So there's a case in there. But regardless of the fact that the Angels did not improve their roster really any, they got a couple good looks for some of their young guys like Zach Neto. Sure, fantastic. Ben Joyce looked okay. But this team is in a rough spot, and I want to go out on a limb here. Not even a limb. I just want to go out and say that none of this should be pointed at Ron Washington, in my opinion. I think he's a great manager. I think he just didn't have the cards in his hand to be able to make anything positive from this franchise this season.
Yeah. Speaking of, Zach Neto left this game with right shoulder irritation on a dive into second base. Nolan Schanuel had left the game the night before. Did not play yesterday. So a little bit of injury concerns at the very end of the year. But Neto, I mean, he's leading the Angels in a bunch of categories. Games played, stolen bases, RBI, offensive war on Fangraphs, things like that. His run value is like 87th percent in baseball. He's batted 249, 761 OPS, 23 homers, 30 stolen bases. You can absolutely see how there is a core here. Logan Ohapi hit 20 home runs. I mean, you can see how there is some quality. Taylor Ward kind of rebounded with a 25-homer season, drove in 74, scored 73 runs. Like, you can see there is a core here. But I think one of the big issues with this Angels team is just they cycled through so many sub-quality players. Willie Calhoun, 68 games, mostly at DH, right? I mean, Nico Cavadas, they acquired him, threw him in for almost 100 plate appearances. He batted 167, right? Aaron Hicks got 70-something plate appearances, batted 140. And it's just there's so many guys that they've cycled so many youngsters through. And you heard some comments from Ron Washington that he had to clean up a little bit about they didn't have major league players. And he was what he was trying to say, and he clarified this, was that they got players and they haven't yet developed them into major leaguers. It's that mindset of you get a young player and you continue to develop them at the major league level and you make them into quality major leaguers. What he was trying to say, and it came out wrong, but it's just been, it's a tough season for the Angels.
If we've learned anything about the Angels over the last decade though, Lindsay, is it's really hard to construct a roster. And even with guys like Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani in the lineup, they still can't find a way to make the postseason. You mentioned that the core is building, and that's nice, and there's some optimism there, but how much optimistic view should you have, even though they had a lot of difficulties this year? Because what are you going into this offseason? What are you expecting your ownership group to do this offseason as the Angels? Are you expecting them to go sign a big free agent guy? Because I'm not, because they didn't think anything. They didn't go after Shohei Ohtani, right?
So, Ron Washington said as much that they weren't going to do that. They weren't going to go out significantly out of pocket to sign some top-tier free agent. He said that.
So you're in the AL West with the Houston Astros, the Texas Rangers, who are neither of them are afraid to spend money, the Seattle Mariners, who have a good young core that just made some big moves at the trade deadline this year, the Oakland A's, the Athletics now, who are have a young core that is actually starting to look, and they did not sell at the deadline. How do you see this team getting out of the basement in 2025? Because right now I don't see a path.
I also don't, and I think that's one of the issues, and I feel bad for Angels fans. I think it all goes back to to ownership, but you know, Art Moreno's not been good for that team. But yeah, I don't see a path forward for them to be competitive in the next season or two. And they got a hit on every single one of their prospects, and we know that a lot of their prospects have not really hit because they've rushed them to the majors. And it's a struggle here. I don't love it for them. You mentioned Oakland though. Let's talk about Oakland real quick. They won that last matchup at home, the finale in the Coliseum. The fans, for the most part, were well-behaved. A fan or two ran on the field the ninth inning, but for the most part, everything went well. And my favorite moment afterwards was, I think the manager coming up and just grabbing the mic and just talking for about 5 minutes. It was just, I mean, it was something where you could tell that Mark Kotze was not just saying stuff to say stuff. He used to play for the Oakland A's. You know, he patrolled that outfield. He's been manager there for a few years now. He absolutely met the moment. And I'm happy that this ended in a win. Obviously, I'm not happy with the way it happened. And I think the tweet from Jeff Passan from ESPN that he put out right as the game ended yesterday was the absolute right way to recap what happened. I'm just going to read this verbatim real quick. The Oakland A's were killed by greed. Do not allow the people responsible for this to spin it any other way. John Fisher did not have to move his team. Major League Baseball and its owners did not need to be complicit in it. This was a choice, the wrong one, and history will sneer. And
100%.
100% right. This did not need to happen. All of the things that John Fisher said he had to have to stay in Oakland, he didn't get any of those things in Las Vegas. And it was very obvious that he moved the team because he wanted to move the team. He wanted to be somewhere else. He did not want to stay in Oakland. And I feel for Oakland fans because multiple teams have left Oakland. The Raiders also left. The Warriors also left. Now the A's have left. And I understand people will criticize the local government for that. I think the big thing here is Oakland is the first city that we've really seen in the United States say, no, we are not going to fund 75% of a privately held facility for a billionaire's sports team. And unfortunately, while other cities still will give you tons of money to move there and build you a facility, things like this are going to happen. I think ultimately for Oakland, that was the right move. Refusing to give these billionaires hundreds of millions of dollars. And again, Oakland offered more money to John Fisher than what Las Vegas gave him. But it's a shame. I hate this for Oakland fans. I hate that MLB and Rob Manfred said, we're still serving the Bay Area because there is a team in San Francisco. That is not how it works. And this sucks. This sucks for everybody involved. This sucks for the players to have to play in a minor league ballpark for 3 years or longer. This sucks for the fans who have lost their team, who has been there. You know, this is one of the longer tenured teams to relocate. This sucks for everyone involved. And I don't know if it sucks or not for John Fisher in the end. I don't care what it does for John Fisher. This sucks for everybody else. And I don't really have anything else to say about it. Like this sucks.
I couldn't have said it any better myself. I agree with you completely. And what I do think is I don't think that this is going to be a successful transition to Sacramento, to Las Vegas, to Mars, wherever the Athletics find their way to be. And that's a big shame for Oakland fans. And that for sure, because you could tell that this team, these fans are very loyal. I mean, yeah, they didn't show up all year, but that was more in protest. But this last series, you saw them show out, and it was amazing to see the Coliseum rocking like we've seen in the past. When this team was good, just a few years ago, we talked about they're the last team other than the Astros to win the AL West. That stadium was packed. That stadium was packed when they had the players and they had the team actually running for the playoffs. So it's not like these fans have not showed up. It's not like they're unloyal fans. We've seen so many other sports teams have way worse fans that are still having, there's no question that they're not moving. Right. So yeah, this is a big nod on John Fisher. He needs to sell the team, and we deservingly spent way more time than we should have on this topic, but I think we need to stop saying his name because he doesn't deserve any credit in our baseball shows anymore.
Flip side, I think we need to constantly point out how bad he is. I do think there is a world where the Sacramento to Las Vegas move ends up not happening and MLB in frustration forces him to sell and maybe they come back to Oakland. I'm still holding out hope
that is the best case scenario
here because they are not playing in Oakland next year. It is done. They are going to Sacramento. That field, by the way, the Sacramento Rivercats, that field is being changed to artificial turf so that it can support both a minor league and a major league team. They will do a game in the morning, a game in the evening. Temperatures are over 100 degrees in the middle of the day.
You're going to see a lot of injuries. You're going to see a lot of injuries
on the turf. And then turf is even hotter. Turf holds heat. It's even hotter during the day. So it's not a great situation. The Players Association has not yet signed off on that move. There's a lot of questions they still have. We could go on about this for a while. We probably will at some point down the offseason, but this is just them playing in Las Vegas is not yet a done deal. Just know that. There is a lot of stuff with that plan. There's no public financing available. We still don't have detailed plans on the ballpark. There's a lot of stuff that we still don't know about that has to get done so that they can actually break ground, build a stadium, and play in a couple seasons. And I'm still not convinced it's going to happen. So we'll see what happens. But let's stop talking about John Fisher. Okay. Charlie Blackmon had a big day. It was his final home game at Coors Field. Obviously, as we pointed out, Charlie Blackmon will be retiring at the end of the season. Chuck Nasty, but they beat the Cardinals 10-8. Blackmon leading off 1-for-3, hits a home run, his 12th of the season, drives in 3. So he is, it's not the only runs that they score, but it is, you know, a big part of a five run eighth inning. I don't really have a lot here. I'm happy that they got a series to honor Charlie Blackmon.
Super cool.
Do we
his
have
parents throughout the first pitch too?
That was cool. Yeah. 61-98 for the Rockies. Here's a fun question for you. 61-98 for the Rockies. They got the Dodgers for 3 this weekend, who again are locked into the number 2 seed. Will not have Freddie Freeman or locked in. They're either 1 or 2. They know that. Is there any chance that the Rockies can avoid losing 2 games and having less than 100 losses this year?
Yeah, there's a chance, especially since you're probably going to see the Dodgers take a big step back now that they've clinched the NL West and what happened with the Freddie Freeman injury. I think you're going to see some days off from guys like Mookie Betts, maybe even Shohei Ohtani. So, yeah, there's a chance, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think that they don't go to 101. I don't think they're going to get swept, but If I'm taking a prediction, I'd say that they end the season right at 62-100.
Yeah, that it feels like a 90% LA squad, even without Freddie, without Miguel Rojas, who's still hurt. Tommy Edman played shortstop last night. Still feels like they can win 100. They can win 2 out of 3 in this series. Okay, we're way over time on this, but wrapping up tonight starts 3 different series that I think all have significant implications. Again, the only real drama we have is which of these NL wildcard teams will be out. So, are you watching Diamondbacks versus Padres? It's Yu Darvish versus Merrill Kelly. Are you watching Braves versus Royals, which is Max Fried versus Brady Singer? Or are you watching Mets versus Brewers, which is Sean Manaea versus Frankie Montas? Which of these games are you watching closest?
Oh, I'm so glad that Apple TV presents Multiview because I have all 3 of these bad boys on, Lindsay. But the one that I'm going to be really paying attention to, the one that's going to be on the bigger portion of my screen, will be the Diamondbacks and Padres, because I think the Diamondbacks direct the rest of the way for the National League. What happens with their record, what happens with them moving forward determines if we play baseball on Monday after the weekend.
Yeah.
So all eyes will be on that Diamondbacks and Padres for me.
Yeah, Diamondbacks, to clinch, they have to have a combination of 4 wins and Atlanta losses for them to clinch a spot ahead of Atlanta. If they want to be ahead of the Mets, I think they have to have 5 Arizona wins or New York losses. And they can technically be ahead of San Diego with 7 wins or 6 losses. Actually, and I think now they can't. After last night's results, they can't anymore. So, like, they absolutely can still punch their ticket this weekend. They got to win, and they got to do it against the Padres, which is, again, Padres are locked into their seating. That's not going to change no matter what happens this weekend. So there you go.
There you go. Yeah, Thanks for the extra 10 minutes today.
Yep. This has been First Pitch for Friday, September 27th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. Helps folks find the show. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell down below. Either way, tell your friends about this cool show that recaps MLB on a daily basis. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.